If you're looking for a Christmas gift for a child, grandchild, or godchild ages 2 through 7, purchase the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for December, Angel, Angel, What Do You See? Follow Mary and Joseph, the donkey, the innkeeper, and the shepherds to discover that this special baby is the Savior, born for you and me. Learn more about Angel, Angel, What Do You See? By calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, or at issuesetc.org. Angel, Angel, What Do You See? Many parents are concerned, deeply concerned. It's always been dangerous, spiritually, raising children in a fallen and corrupt world. That's the greatest concern of Christian parents, is how do we instill the faith, and then also along with that faith, the values and the convictions that go along with the Christian faith in our children. But nowadays, they are directly under attack in ways that are alluring and very popular, especially in the cultural left. So can you remain silently vigilant and hope for the best? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Joining us to talk about equipping our children to face the cultural left, Katie Faust. She's founder and director of the children's rights organization, Them Before Us, author of a recent column for The Federalist titled Four Ways to Help Your Kids Fight Assimilation into Cultural Leftism. Katie, welcome back.
Hi, thanks for having me again.
So how bad is it for our children when it comes to the attempts to assimilate them into the cultural left?
Well, if adults feel like they're getting a lot of pressure, just multiply that by 10. I mean, our kids are surrounded. I mean, it's a fire hose of leftist ideology, and it comes at it from every direction, from the school system, from media, from government, you know, from advertisements. It's everywhere. And, you know, you'll be watching a show that should have nothing to do with all of these kind of leftist topics, you know, like Stranger Things 3, and they will work in some kind of LGBT angle, right, or promotion of abortion or whatever it is. I mean, it's like it is seeping into our kids' world overtly and covertly.
Before we get into the very interesting story about your daughter's lunchtime conversation,
yeah,
many parents just say, I can remain quietly vigilant, and I'm going to hope for the best. Why is that not an option here?
Right, because the world is screaming at them. The world is talking to them about all of these topics, about abortion and about gay marriage and transgenderism and all the things that are, you know, headlining in the world, right? Our kids are hearing that. Even if your kids are homeschooled, right? Even if they're in private school, the left is getting this message to our kids, because really the only way not to is if you're living in a cave, which is goes against the biblical mandate to be the salt and the light of the world. And so you have got to function as a counterbalance, not just a counterbalance, but you need to be the dominant voice in their world, right? You need to set them up with truth and beauty so that they can spot the lies when they hear it.
You have a great example by way of a lunchtime conversation your daughter had on gay marriage. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so I talk in the article about how, you know, our philosophy is to saturate our kids in truth and beauty in the elementary school years, right, where we sort of filter out distorted messages about body image or violence or worldview or whatever, right, and we just saturate them in truth and beauty. We give them lots of exposure to the real thing. But when they hit about middle school, there's sort of a switch that gets flipped in the minds of kids, right? They're growing and they're ready for critical thinking. And so before our kids go into middle school, we introduce them to difficult topics. And we tell our kids, we want you to know more about these subjects than anyone else. When you walk into a room and you're hearing about socialism, or you're hearing about racism, or you're hearing about abortion, we want you to know more than all of your friends. And so we introduce these concepts to our kids right around the time that they're 10, 11, 12, 13. And so we did that before our oldest daughter went to public middle school for the first time. And so we're walking home from the bus. This is like 5 years ago now. And she's telling me about this conversation that she had with her friend. And she said, you know, Morgan, we had had a conversation in class where I said, you know, I don't agree with you about gay marriage. She brought it up at the lunch table, like this place where all the sixth grade friends ate lunch together. And Morgan said in front of all the friends, "You don't agree with me that gay marriage should be legal? Well, that means you hate gay people." And of course, 9 sets of eyes, you know, this entire table looks at my daughter. And she goes, "No, it doesn't. My grandmother is gay and I love her. So what's your argument?" And so her friend said, "Well, if a man and woman who love each other can get married, then 2 men who love each other should be able to get married, and 2 women who love each other should be able to get married. There's no difference." And my daughter goes, "A man and a woman make a baby. A man and a man don't make a baby. A woman and a woman don't make a baby. That's the difference." And her friend goes, "Oh, well, okay, well, I guess that, you know, a man and a man can just adopt a baby then." And my daughter, who has an adoptive brother, said, "No, adoption's not about giving kids to adults who want them. Adoption is about finding parents for kids who need them, and kids need a mom and dad." And her friend goes, "Oh, well, I kind of think that kids just need to be safe and loved." And my daughter goes, "No, dads teach kids certain lessons, and moms teach kids other lessons, and kids need both kinds of lessons." And like, as she was telling me this on the way home, I was just like, calm. I'm like, "Wow, honey, what really good responses you had." But inside, I'm like, "Yeah, baby. Yeah, you nailed it." Because we are like, we had been talking with her for 6 to 8 months, right? This great equipping of like, we are going to download all this information on all of these hot topics for you. And she had been able to retain it and then, you know, articulate it on a 6th grade level. So when I said, "Mothers and fathers offer distinct and complementary benefits to children," she said, "Hey, okay, dads teach kids certain lessons, moms teach kids other lessons, kids need both lessons." And so it really like showed me, I'm like, wow, okay, they can handle this, right? And they're stronger as a result.
Give us some other examples of the kind of subjects that come up for your children with their peers.
Well, I listed one in the article. One of my other daughter's very good friends gave the, "Oh, well, I believe in abortion because my body, my choice." And my daughter came home and was just like, "You wouldn't believe this, Mom. I can't believe my friend thinks that abortion is okay." And so I said, okay, you know, I talk in the article about how there's kind of different steps to parenting your kids. And step one is that model it for them. Model them how to live well and saturate them in truth and beauty. Step two is like invite them into what you're already doing, right? Let them help you formulate arguments and opinions and evaluate news headlines. And then number three is like work with them to investigate, work with them to help them formulate an argument or their opinion or a response. So that's what we did when my daughter came home and said this thing about my body, my choice. And so I said, okay, let's watch some videos about prenatal development. Let's study some good rebuttals to pro-choice talking points. And it was probably a 3-hour conversation, you know, where we're talking and researching and reading and discussing. And finally she goes, "Man, the next time I hear my body, my choice, I'm going to say, no, if it was your body, you would be the one dead at the end of the abortion." And I was like, dang, girl. Like she really got it, you know, but a lot of times our kids are not necessarily going to work this through unless they have to, you know, and so we do need to allow them to face and grapple through these difficult questions so that they can really become worldview warriors.
You say that our parents' goal is not to keep their kids safe and happy. What do you mean by that?
I think that we've got it wrong in America. I think we worship safety in general, but specifically parents. We spend so much time trying to keep our kids safe. We placate, we pacify, but that's not the goal. The goal is training, right? The goal is training them to, you know, just on a basic level, manage themselves and make good decisions. But when it comes to Christian parents, you need to be training your kids to understand what it is they believe and why they believe it and be able to defend it. Because it is a war. Like, we are in the information age, and the war our kids are facing is a war of ideas. And so we need to equip them with the best arguments. And that training, like I said, kind of involves 4 steps, which I discuss in the article, is sort of a I do, you watch, right? First, model it. Let your kids see you do it. Step 2 is I do, you help. So you're doing it as a parent, and then the kid comes along and helps you develop your argument, you know, helps you write that comment on Facebook. And the next step is the you do, I help. So your kids are, you know, my kids are hearing at school that Christopher Columbus, you know, was a brutal racist. Okay, so I'm going to help you find some primary sources about Christopher Columbus so that you can write that response with me helping. And then step four is you do, I watch. You know, step four, they've had years and years of practice of grappling through difficult questions and formulating a solid response that both incorporates scriptural truth but also incorporates natural law. But you can't skip from step one to step four, right? It is a training process where you have to practice and kind of walk alongside them and do it with them. It's sort of a slow handoff. But that is the goal, right? The goal is by the time our kids get to college, our goal, my goal with my husband and I decided, our goal is by the time they get to college, we will have shepherded our kids through every issue that the world throws at them in the safety of our home. And that does require a bit of exposure. And it's risk, right? It's high risk. It's safer to keep your kids locked in the basement and never exposed to any of these different questions, or you think you're keeping them, you know, sheltered from it all. But that just means that they're not going to build that critical resistance, right? They're not going to exercise that pushback muscle that they are going to need throughout the rest of their life.
Why must parents remain their children's primary educators?
Well, first of all, because you're the one that cares the most about their long-term well-being, right? That anybody else that's teaching your kids, even if they like them or care about them, they don't have the same level of connection and investment that you do. So that's number one. But number two is, and I talk about this in the article, whoever gets to your kid first, your kid is naturally going to consider the authority. And so I've seen this with my kids, you know, that if I am the first to talk to my kids about sex and gender, like sex differences, and we are laying that foundation, that truth and beauty foundation, right? Boys are different and girls are different and the differences don't make them unequal. Here's the two different ways that scientists define sex differences, right? One is by their chromosomes and one is by their function and reproduction. Isn't that amazing? Right, so truth and beauty, truth and beauty. And so here's another example. My third grader, who's brilliant, came home last year and he said, Mom, you know, my teacher said that a boy can wear a dress. And I said, okay, what do you think about that? And he thought for a while and he goes, a boy can wear a dress, but that doesn't make him a girl. And I said, why not? And he said, because to become a girl, he would have to change every cell in his body. And I said, that's exactly right. And so he knew that I knew what transgender was. He knew that I had answers about gender differences and sex. And so when he heard something else from his teacher, he knew he could come back and talk to me about it because I got to him first. And so I work with a marriage organization called Canavox, and the moms there, it's a grassroots marriage movement led by mothers, and we all say, you've got to get to your kids first. If you're going to be the primary educator, you have to be the first one to talk to them about this, even if it means talking with them a little sooner than you wish you had to. You know, we say better a year too early than 5 minutes too late, because if you can get to your kids first, they automatically consider you the authority.
So come back to a point you made earlier about including your children in what you're already doing. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, I think a lot of parents make it a little too complicated. They think, okay, if I'm going to train my kids, I need to take them through a book or a curriculum or whatever. And I actually don't think that you have to, even though there are good books and there is good curriculum and, you know, we send our kids to a worldview every summer. But what you really need to do is just include them in what you're already doing. And so I think that most of us, I mean, especially the people that are listening to Issues, etc., I mean, you guys are in this, right? You guys are, you're listening to podcasts, you're reading articles, you're already kind of investigating, what do I say? You know, how do these theological questions that are crashing on the shores of culture, let me study that. Just include your kids in what you're doing, right? If you're listening to an incredible podcast on mothers and fathers and how they parent differently, just say, hey, come listen to this with me. For the longest time, I would just listen to podcasts while I cooked dinner out loud so that my kids could listen to what I was listening to, right? They're getting the same information that I'm getting, and it's reinforcing what I'm talking with them about. So just include them on what you're already doing. And then if you choose to share an article, right, or if you are in an online debate, include your kids in that. Say, hey, listen, this person, you know, made this objection that, you know, conservatives only care about babies when they're in the womb, but they don't care about the babies once they're born. What do you think I should say to that? You know, I think of the examples of this single mom in our church that all of us have been supporting for a while. What other examples would you include in this response? Right, so get them involved in what you're already doing. Let them be your helpers as you formulate those arguments. And so that's kind of step one and step two, is just pull them into what you're already doing. And after you do that for a couple of years, it'll be natural for them to start doing it on their own.
How do we as parents balance what you call exposure with protection? Letting them get their feet wet, being exposed to these ideas, but protecting them from basically being taught the lessons that the cultural left wants to teach them.
I say that when your kids are sort of in that phase of like sponging everything up before that critical thinking switch gets flipped, we do a lot of sheltering. We do filter out on what they're watching and what they're listening to and what adults are saying to our kids, right? And so we do a lot of sheltering when they're young. And I think that that's totally appropriate. When they start to ask those critical thinking questions, we expose them to more. But here's the great news. Like, God gave every kid a mom and dad because every kid's ready for it at a different time. And every parent probably knows the best time to get to their kids with these questions and these issues. My oldest was ready for some of this sooner than, you know, my youngest is. And so parents need to figure that out, but be the first person to get to your kids. And I'm not saying introduce them to the most base arguments out there. I am saying that you need to be the first person who talks about porn and what it is. You need to be the first person that they hear use the word abortion or sex or transgender. You need to be the one that's kind of laying the foundation for this so that they know that they can come back to you when they have more questions. And so there is a balance, and I think it's child by child. But in general, shelter them when they're younger. But man, you got to walk them through these issues when they're in middle school and high school.
Talk about the necessity of staying connected to your kids, because this sounds like a lot of conversation, a lot of seizing the opportunity to have these conversations.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's good to be able to introduce these concepts to your kids, but especially once they're in high school, you need to take the opportunity to talk with them when they bring it up. You have to be, when they do ask you a question or they have a concern or they heard something or they want to process something, you stop what you are doing and you give them your full attention because they're ready to listen right now. And one critical part of this is you want to condition them to talk with you about difficult questions, right? When they hear something that bothers them or they have a question or they're not sure what to do with a comment that a teacher said, you need to condition them to think, I can't wait to tell my mom this. I can't wait to ask my dad this question. Now, one of the main ways that you condition your children to love talking with you about difficult things is to keep it together. You cannot freak out when they ask you something like, hey, my friend just came out. My seventh grade friend came out as bisexual. Isn't that crazy? Right? You cannot go, oh, dang it, I hate this world. This whole, it's so dark. No, you, that's what you're thinking inside. But on the outside, you've got to remain calm, right? Because you need to reward them for bringing difficult topics to your attention, right? Every time they ask you something difficult, it needs to be a relief for them. You need to provide support and help to them. Don't make them manage your explosion or your emotions or your frustration, right? You need to be the safe place for them to put all of their questions and concerns. And you do that by being available and staying calm.
No child wants to be rejected by friends or peers at school. With about a minute, how do you handle that?
Well, first of all, you model that it's hard, right? Because adults have gone through it and they're probably going to go through it. But second, you do need to cultivate from an early age a strong peer group for your friends. So thankfully, my kids have friends at church that they know are sticking with them regardless of what happens at school. And I really do think that we've avoided a lot of the struggles that middle schoolers and high schoolers face because they have such a strong peer group at church. So really start cultivating those relationships early, because then they know, hey, look, if I lose some friends here, I still have my people over here. And that's critical. Another thing is, let them watch you go through it. Sometimes you lose friends too, but you know what? It's not the end of the world.
Finally, then, why is it vital that we not only pass on the right convictions to our children, but that we also equip them to stand by and even defend their convictions?
We're supposed to be the influencers, not the influenced. And this is an age of ideas, right? We are in the information age, where they are going to be bombarded by so many different messages. And learning to defend it is a critical part, in my opinion, of discipleship, right? We're discipling our kids to be able to stand firm. And the reality is that there's very real victims out there of all of these cultural issues. And Christians need to be the first to defend those victims, and we need to show our kids how to do it too.
Katie Faust is founder and director of the children's rights organization, Them Before Us. She's author of a recent column for The Federalist titled Four Ways to Help Your Kids Fight Assimilation into Cultural Leftism. You'll find a link to that article and to Them Before Us under the Talk on Demand archives page at issuesetc.org. Katie, thanks.
Thank you so much for having me.
Chris Rosebro is with us on the other side of the break. Our feature this week in Pop Christianity Today, Signs God is Asking You to Trust Him More, featuring Terry Savelle Foy. Stay tuned.
Essential exercise for the Christian mind. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Please include the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. in your year-end giving. With 3 weeks left in 2019, we're $110,000 short of expenses. You can make a secure online gift at issuesetc.org. You can also make a year-end tax-deductible donation by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for listening, and thanks for keeping us in mind at the end of the year.
Ed Crusum offers Bible-based, Christ-focused Christmas ornaments in various sizes for church and home. Use our Jesse Tree collection to teach your children this Advent and see our new premium ornaments, a crucifixion tableau, angel and shepherds, the Holy Family, Epiphany, and much more. Visit adcrusum.com for unique and theologically sound greeting cards, jewelry, gifts, churchwares, banners, certificates, and housewares. That's adcrusum.com.
This week on The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, we'll study the bread with no expiration date, the words of eternal life, Jesus' brothers disbelieve, Jesus' teaching is from the Father, and can this be the Christ? Join me, Pastor Will Wheaton, as we continue our walk through St. John's Gospel on The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, your daily verse-by-verse Bible study on demand at thewordendures.org. thewordendures.org.
Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic, and about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's classical Christian curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR20. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.